Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Rex Salon podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the problem of longevity. Don't think it's a problem? Maybe after this podcast, you'll think again. So we eat right, we exercise, we live longer, but then we die poor. One of the conundrums of modern life is we live longer due to better lifestyles, medical advancements, more tests, quicker tests, and this is almost universally celebrated. We all enjoy the prospect of being around to see our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren grow up and be around for their milestones. There can be no better retirement than enjoying life after years of hard work. People retiring today are not living 10 to 15 years after retirement, but more like 20 to 25 or more. Problem is that wealth advice, on the whole, has not kept up with these radical changes and assumptions on longevity. In the mid-noughties, when I came into this industry, advisors were taught to project retirement savings income out 20 years, and that capital exhaustion was acceptable. There are still parts of the insurance investment industry where this kind of planning takes place. There are also those advisors who advise that a silo approach to onshore and offshore investments be used, and the depletion of local investments, local South African investments, is just not prudent, but it's advisable to deplete it. Because, yeah, we all know offshore will more than make up for any capital withdrawals locally. I wish. Why on earth would a broker or advisor even buy into these ludicrous practices? Let's look at some of the background and assumptions. Every year, we get a greater understanding of what shortens life. But this increase in life expectancy has to be funded from somewhere. In countries that have decent government-sponsored pensions, in other words, defined benefit pensions, this is causing a severe problem, exacerbated by the slowing birth rate. In effect, in those countries, they're using pension contributions from the young to pay the old. And estimates made decades ago as how long people would live in retirement are now way out. And this is all going to implode one day. The dramatic wobble in the UK pensions during the trust debacle was a small foretaste of what is to come. By 2030, the last of the boomers will stop contributing to pensions and start expecting a pension themselves, a pension income themselves. The following generations have a low birth rate and are nowhere near the wealth level of their boomer parents at the same age. In South Africa, we do not have a meaningful government pension scheme to fall back on, just our own investments accrued over time, either in a retirement wrapper or discretionary assets. You now also have to assume that you will live at least 30 years past retirement. So how do you fix this? For salary earners, there are very few options. You have to save and invest more. Most salary earners in decent-sized companies must contribute to a provident or pension fund, and over a working lifetime, that should solve the problem. Not so fast. People are now changing jobs on average every 3 to 5 years, and 90% of them will cash in their provident or pension fund and take the tax lumps as they come. Making that up later, when the kids have left school, bond is paid off, etc., isn't as easy as you think, but it is not impossible. Here are some pointers. 1. Put a date on your retirement. This helps you and your planner determine how you will need to build your wealth toward that date. A goal, if you will. It is just not realistic to expect someone to put the same amount as a percentage of their salaries away the whole of their life, because there are times where there'll be less disposable income than others. And there will be times where you can accumulate more if you're disciplined enough to do so. This is one of the most useful roles of a financial planner today. They help you divert that wealth when it comes and invest it before it burns a hole in your pocket. If they're really clever, they'll make sure that it is flexible so that if life happens, it's not locked up until your old age. Even if you never want to retire, which is quite possible if you're an entrepreneur, you will still need to build up this retirement pot in case your body or your mind packs up before you think you're ready to do so. It happens. Have an idea in today's terms how much you need as an income from your investments. A financial planner can work out the size of capital to produce that, what growth and inflation might be, but they cannot tell you what income you should be pulling down. Only you can do that. To do this properly, you'll have to do a personal income statement. Look, it's called a budget. Nobody wants to do a budget. So let's just call it a personal income statement. And it is going to be completely personal to you, and there's no judgment in it. It just gives the planner a place to start from so that they can help you plan for the future. Life happens, recessions happen, jobs are lost, children fail to launch out of a nest, divorces happen. There's all sorts of things that happen as a bump in the road for a plan. That is why a plan needs to be a living entity. It needs to change when circumstances change. When there are macroeconomic changes in the environment, it will need to change. When inflation goes out of the ordinary for a prolonged period of time, for example, like it's looking like it's doing in the States at the moment. Those sort of things, a plan needs to be able to adjust so that you can stay on the right track. I often equate this to playing a game of golf. If you stand on a tee and you hit a golf ball, if your swing is out by 1% and you only hit the ball 10 or 15 yards, you're still going to be on the fairway. But that same 1%, if you've hit the ball 200 yards, then you can be in the weeds, and seriously in the weeds. That is why it's important that as time goes along, that you make those small adjustments, and that your plan stays on the fairway. You need to build a relationship with somebody who can keep you on the fairway and out of the weeds, can keep you on the road and out of the donga. Pre- and post-retirement investments should be treated quite differently. Pre-retirement funds, especially those more than 10 years away from retirement, should be exposed for maximum growth, both local and offshore. This doesn't mean that you throw everything into a high-growth portfolio and come back in 20 years when you need it. But it also doesn't mean that that portfolio needs to be micromanaged. From 3 years out from retirement, the portfolios need to start aligning themselves with their new job, the job to produce an income. This requires quite a different portfolio compared to a growth portfolio, and far more skill and experience in our diversity of asset classes. If you've managed over your working life to build up a critical mass of, say, 8 million investments, but if you just look at a simple heuristic, where 1 million rand can produce you an income of 4,500 rand a month, perhaps 8 million isn't the lotto winnings that we all thought it was. So if you've got a critical mass, then you can bring down the costs of your investment by using a bespoke asset manager. Rexilom Invest, we are bespoke asset managers. This is what we do on a day-to-day basis. Those managers manage diversified asset portfolios. They're not just stockbrokers. They don't just look after the JSE. They invest in asset classes all over the world in order to achieve what a client needs. Unit trusts were designed for smaller and growing portfolios. But these should also change when the portfolio is switched from growth to income at retirement. You can also keep down costs by using ETFs and trackers, and most independent financials have access to these tools too. As you get older, your appetite for risky investments and the personal management of them usually diminishes. If at the retirement phase you still want to keep your hand in, then hive off the assets needed to produce your sustainable income, ring fence them, and let somebody manage that. Then you can use whatever is the excess to play with. It should be money that you can afford to lose, but please don't go and leverage it too. Managing income producing assets is a multidisciplinary approach that requires a blending of asset classes like fixed and variable income bonds, REITs, high dividend stocks, etc., and is beyond the experience of most stockbrokers, let alone retail investors, managing their own portfolio. Income-producing investments usually come in the shape of bonds, with a smattering of dividends and REITs at various times, and with a growth component from stocks to ensure that the capital grows and therefore sustains the income in line with inflation. It is possible just to have a stock portfolio and use dividends, but then the sustainable income should be reduced in line with the dividend profile of the underlying companies. Then you can review this once a year to determine how much more you can extract, if any, from the investment and keep the investment sustainable without capital erosion. This, obviously, because markets go through three cycles, that amount is going to change on an annual basis. It's going to change even on a monthly basis, and is automatically, because you want to use this approach, is going to take much of the certainty out of the equation. Prudence. There's no way of getting around it. If you want your investments to produce an income indefinitely, increasing with inflation and without any volatility, then you have to manage it prudently. And this prudence can take several forms. The drawdown on a well-balanced fund shouldn't exceed 5.5% per annum. 4.5% is even better. All liquid assets, local and offshore, should be considered and managed together. Residential property shouldn't be considered as an investment asset. All it does is replace rental expenses and retirement. Other illiquid assets, property, can be built into the plan at a later date if the pressure on the investments are too high and you need to create more liquidity. Capital depletion of any asset bucket, whether it's local or offshore, really should be avoided at all costs. In South Africa, some brokers advise, and I alluded to this earlier, that clients deplete local investments, saving offshore for later. This, frankly, is a recipe for disaster. But don't worry, the errant broker will be long gone before that flak hits the fan. It's much better to take a prudent drawdown from all your buckets of investments, including offshore, and bring that offshore income back once a year, timing it according to the exchange rate. How and when this is done is the role of an experienced financial planner and should take into consideration the investor's assets, which are almost always unique. Robo-advisors and the Twitterverse and cookie cutter programs used by brokers cannot give you this sort of advice. Offshore investments have the added complication of exchange rate fluctuations, which adds a whole new layer of uncertainty that has to be planned for. It's very difficult to accept a smaller income than you want, need, or you used to at retirement. Who on earth wants to be forced to scale back after decades of hard graft? Brokers will ultimately bow to your wishes and give you the income that you want, knowing that they will be long gone when the investment depletes. Find a trusted planner who will work with you over the years to align your wealth with your dreams. Help you make the uncomfortable choices before it's too late. Look after your investments prudently and holistically, and not leave you with a nightmare in your final years. Let's look at your pre-retirement sources of income. Not everybody can work for themselves, but some people prefer the structure of a corporate environment. Notwithstanding this, working for yourself is becoming easier all the time and has the added benefit that a corporate can no longer dictate your sell-by date. This is one of the major reasons back in the noughties I got out of the corporate environment and into this environment. I was looking at retirement in a decade or so time, and I didn't want somebody to give me a retirement party and shuffle me off to the old age home. Thank you very much. Working for oneself can take the form of contracting or freelancing as long as your skill set is maintained and can last as long as you want. post-COVID, this has become easier than ever. And I cannot emphasize enough how important it is for every retiree to at least consider this approach. Having your own property portfolio used to be a great panacea of having a passive income at retirement, and in many ways it still is, but it isn't passive at all. The property has to be maintained, tenants managed, utilities paid, insurance paid, defaulting tenants evicted. To add insult to injury, the return on investment isn't great. Ordinary investments like stocks or ETFs, properly invested, are actually far more passive. They can be managed from your armchair without the risk of defaulting tenants. Capital appreciation of property has been stagnant for years. You might as well have owned stocks and taken the dividends. In summary then, if you want to fund your long, healthy life, then the assumptions made a decade or more ago are going to have to change. The good news is that if that change is implemented slowly, it's much less painful than if it's imposed quickly, and it doesn't necessarily end up with a slow-boiled frog. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again soon. Bye.